All right, hi everybody, and welcome to the Test 4 preparation class for the junior and senior high class in this American History program of History at Our House. We're going to review your answers to the test preparation sheets without further ado. So let's head over there and see how you did and what, if any, help you need to improve your grasp, retention, and understanding of this particular material. So we begin with anchor facts. Those most fundamental, most powerful facts that just never seem to go away in terms of how important they are. So let's go. So Alexander, what's 1215, please? My signal, my volume's on. What about yours? Uh-oh. That's not an auspicious start. You got a microphone issue. All right. While Alexander is sorting that out, let's get somebody else to do number one, 1215. All right. How about Ben?
The Magna Carta was created. It began the idea of no taxation without representation, which was part of the reason for the Revolutionary War.
Okay, pretty good. I would like to see it be a little bit more general than that. It's true that no taxation without representation is an idea, is an important idea, but it is only a component of a broader principle. And I think that if you fail to grasp the broader association, you are not getting the meaning of history. So I want to focus on this because of the again, what is the broadest permanent value here? No taxation without representation is a part of something else. What is it? What is that broader concept, of which the Magna Carta is the beginning in English history? Cliff, go ahead.
A constitutional monarchy.
Okay, your volume's way, way low as well, so stay close to the mic. But yes, constitutional monarchy is the key idea here. So no taxation without representation is a part of that type of thinking. And it's very interesting because I'm going to harp on this a bit here, Ben, but I don't want you to feel bad, because I think a lot of people that study American history end up stuck at this point. In other words, they read the part about no taxation without representation, and they kind of memorize that thought, and they fail to elevate their thinking to the necessary level of abstraction to really benefit from understanding that phrase. So that phrase is merely an example of, an artifact of, a way of thinking. That way of thinking is constitutional monarchy. But what's so cool about the American Revolution is the founders started there, but they went past it. That's why it's a revolution. If the founders had just got stuck with that principle, there never would have been an American Revolution. But their ability to elevate their thinking to the plane of individual, inalienable, individual rights, that was the revolution. Because they went from accepting the idea of constitutional monarchy, where you can be oppressed so long as you're represented, to no way, no oppression. Not just no taxation without representation, but no oppression. We need to try to rethink the entire foundation of government. So yeah, this is a hugely significant milestone. And in a sense, what has happened in American culture is a regression, a failure to truly understand what America is And we're back there now. We're back at the Magna Carta type of thinking. Most Americans are just fine with no matter, you know, how high the taxes go and how much of their pursuit of happiness is hampered, as long as there's representation. So we're back to being, and the presidents are all walking around saying that we're a democracy. We're back to that type of thinking. The concept of rights is gone. Well, that's a strong statement. Maybe I should back away from that a bit, but it is, it's been seriously, pegged back. And that's part of why America's changed so much and doesn't quite, have the freedom that it did before. So anyway, I better be careful. I can't have a 5-minute spiel on every single question, but that one is such a big one. It's so amazing to think about this. The progression of history and where we are in that. And unfortunately we're in one of those times where things are going backwards and we're going back to the type of thinking that was involved in the Magna Carta, not in the type of thinking that the founders had. So I don't know if you got that particular idea there, but really crucial to identify the Magna Carta as constitutional monarchy. We'll start with that. Sound test, Alexander. All right, Alexander, I want you to exit and come back, please. For whatever reason, you're having a sound issue. There's no point in staying if you can't speak up. So leave the room and then come back. Okay, let's go to number two, 508-509. Next one, Sophie, go ahead.
508 and 509 BC were the Athenian democracy and Roman Republic. This was the first instance of breaking the mold of monarchy and set the stage for America's republic.
Ooh, nicely put. Breaking the mold of monarchy. I like that one. Okay, well done. Okay, so circa 3000 BC. What about that one? Let's see here. Poor Cliff's got the strap. Who else has got some? All right, Timothy, what about you? I know it looks like you're on a device today. I don't even know if I can unmute you. Timothy, unmute yourself. Oh, we don't need one of those kinds of days. Alexander, your volume back? Oh, man. Well, this is going to be one of those times when I'm just going to have to power through it all. Okay, you're unmuted now, Timothy. Try to speak up. All right, so much for that. Keen, help us out here.
Circa 3000 BC, Menes Narmer unifies Egypt. This is important to American history because we need to be able to understand the norm that was monarchy up until the United States, really.
Okay, excellent. All right, 476 AD. Bria, what about you? Bria, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, speak up.
Okay.
Number four, as loud as you can.
The fall of Rome.
That's not loud. Crank it.
The fall of Rome was made by Germanic barbarians and caused...
All right, that's part of the answer. The fall of Rome was caused by Germanic barbarians. We need the consequence. What is the consequence for American history? Who cares that there wasn't any Rome around? What is the consequence? We get the rise of Europe in its many different competing peoples who eventually are going to colonize America. Okay. Let's go. Wow, today's a day of difficulties. Number five, 1607 to 1620. Sophie, what can you do there?
The first settlements of Jamestown and Plymouth were established in 1607 and 1620 AD. These were the start of colonizing America and successfully settling in the new land to become the United States of America.
All right, great. Did you say English, successful English colonization, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. I think I missed it. But yeah, focus on the fact that it's English colonization, because we do not get a United States of America with the Portuguese, with the French, with the Spanish, anybody else coming over here. Only if it's the English. All right, and then our first anchor fact associated with the Reformation, number 6, 1517 A.D., Ben, how about that one?
1517 AD. The Reformation and religious wars begin. This was the beginning of the idea of religious toleration, which led to religious freedom in America.
Well, that's a peculiar way of putting it. Now, in 1517 AD, we have something very specific. What is it, Ben?
Oh, the 95 Theses, right?
Of Martin Luther. Yeah, okay, so that's what belongs on here. That's an anchor fact. Martin Luther rejecting the authority of the Pope and issuing his 95 Theses to form Lutheranism. Now, this leads to the Reformation and religious wars, or this initiates the Reformation, which leads to religious wars. But be careful of suggesting that the Reformation produces, or has in essence, religious toleration as its essence. It most certainly does not. So it has religious violence at the heart of it, this great argument leading to mass murder. So that's the problem, is that how do we settle religious differences? The Europeans of that time certainly did not know how, in any civilized way. So their inability to solve these problems is why America is so important. Why people escaping from Europe to come to America and, well, for the longest time living in the wilderness and not so much having neighbors that would kill them for their religious differences, but over time coming to be separate colonies with different beliefs. Oh, trying to live side by side, you know, but learning to tolerate each other. It's a long, torturous story until the Founding Fathers come along and systematize that. And, well, we got Roger Williams, we got other important characters like Lord Baltimore who are bringing a tolerationist attitude, but it's not going to become a really solid, complete fact until the Founding Fathers bring religious freedom into the equation. So the Reformation fits in our story of American history really essentially, and in history in general, because it's a terrible episode of religious barbarism in Europe, sparked by religious controversies, which by themselves, I'm not here to tell you, and nobody, except for Martin Luther or John Calvin, should be arguing this out about this or that aspect of some complex dogma within Christianity. That's what they were interested in it, and it was really, really important to them. But the consequence was that people who were Christians were murdering each other. So, as far as we're concerned, at this point in our history now, we're past that. That's the beauty of it. That's how wonderful things are now. We're past it. How did we get past that? Tens of millions of Europeans had to murder each other, which is really, really tragic and awful, for people to start stepping away from this barbarism and thinking in a new way. So yeah, be careful not to characterize the Reformation as it sounded like you were saying that it was an era of toleration, which it most certainly was not. And so we have to give credit where credit is due. That goes to people like Roger Williams, Lord Baltimore, and above all the Founding Fathers. Okay. So, complete this sentence in three ways. Number 7, there would be no United States of America without the Founding Fathers. So there's really 4 ways, so I gave you 3. You can pick 3 out of 4. So, what are the 4 ways? Sophie, go ahead.
There would be no United States of America without, number 1, the signing of the Declaration of Independence by the Founding Fathers, and number two, the writing of the Constitution by the Founding Fathers, and number three, the creation of the Bill of Rights to amend the Constitution by the Founding Fathers.
Okay, that's an interesting take, and I'm fine with that. It's I would say that that's a really concrete way of expressing it. In other words, focusing on the three documents. I like that. But I was looking for a little bit more of an abstract way of stating it. So, for instance, the Declaration of Independence means the Founding Fathers declaring their independence from Britain. So that's kind of more of the abstraction again. Then, when you said the Constitution, what would you say that the Constitution would be a symbol of? I mean, it is a document, but what does it represent, Sophie?
It represents the Founding Fathers creating their own laws for their country.
Okay, but the last thing you said was the most important. What do you mean, their country?
Their created country that they really made themselves.
Yeah, this United States with a capital U, right? So that's the thing, was the Constitution is the symbol of the unification of the states. The unity, the unification. So that's, so we've got Declaration of their independence from Britain. We have their unification. Isn't there something in between there, though? Aren't we missing something? What goes in between declaring and unifying? There's something there, I guarantee you. I'll give you a hint. The symbol is George Washington crossing the Delaware. What's that our symbol of? What had to happen in between declaration and unification? Alexander says, fighting. Exactly. Fighting the Revolutionary War. Fighting for independence. All right. They had to declare it. They had to fight for it. And then they had to unify to keep it. And then, as you said, Sophie, the third thing you said was Bill of Rights, which is good, but that's a part of maintaining it. So that's the fourth thing as a theme. They had to maintain it as presidents. And that means making certain kinds of laws, acting in a certain way, leading the country now that it exists. Once they made it, the Constitution, then they had to lead it. All right, so again, those are incredible jobs. All right, number eight. What were writs of assistance? What Founding Father argued against them and why, please? Timothy, can you handle that one? I can't hear you. How can so many technical issues pop up only on task preparation day? That is really annoying. Ben, go ahead.
Writs of assistance were special permission slips that allowed British officers to search anyone's property anytime. James Otis argued against them, saying they were against the rights of Englishmen.
Okay, against the rights of Englishmen, right? So we're at the beginning of the revolution, and that's the key to what you were saying earlier, Ben, about the Magna Carta. All right, so, try again, Timothy. Just speak up for a test. Now, you still haven't solved it. So why is it different today? I mean, that's really annoying that it should be different on a test prep day. Number nine, what was the Stamp Act of 1765? Why did Patrick Henry and others see it as a sign of tyranny? Bria.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Stamp Act was an act of where they made people put stamps on important documents, and Patrick Henry and others saw it as tyranny because one thing goes to another, and others go to big problems.
Okay, true enough, but that's a little bit informal. So what we need here is a more formal statement of that. And what was the one thing leading to the other thing? Is kind of, we need that in a more specific form. So what we need is, if the British government's going to make one law regulating life in the colonies, why could it not make whatever laws that it wanted? And well, When are the people in America going to have any say in their laws if it's the British government that's making all the laws? That's tyranny. That's where they really don't even have a say. They can't even, there's no representation here. Right? So that is totally tyranny. Taxation, any type of regulation without the people who upon whom that it is imposed having even a word to say about it. So that was why the Stamp Act was seen as so negative. Okay. And now we also know, though, that remember that they didn't object to all the laws the British government was making. This was another interesting thing. Like, for instance, why didn't they object to all the laws having to do with restrictions on trade? That was such an interesting challenge for them. Why did they not see all the trade restrictions on them as tyrannical, Keane?
Because they still believed in their purpose as colonies, which was to serve the mother country. So, you know, they didn't like, you know, having these restrictions, but they could see that it was still within their purpose, and which is to serve the mother country.
Yeah, that's well said, right? So it was still within their definition of their role as colonists, right? That's what they were there to do. So in other words, they agreed with they weren't able to repudiate the theory of colonization. So that the only way they could repudiate the theory of colonization was to elevate their thinking to the level of individual rights and to say there aren't just rights of Englishmen and there aren't just rights of home country versus colonies. There aren't just, you know, these particular kind of tug of wars between citizens and kings. All of that is actually a mistake. What we need is a different type of government altogether, dedicated to securing rights. That is just, man, every time I think about it, it blows my mind. Okay. Number 10. What caused the Boston Tea Party of 1773? How did the British government respond? Dare I pick Timothy? Oh, I'm going to cry. Okay, Sophie, go ahead.
After the Boston Massacre, British Parliament lowered the taxes on tea. They allowed ships with tea into American harbors, but the colonists thought it was a trick. Colonists didn't buy the tea and even made some shipments sail back to England. In Boston, the colonists dressed up in Indians and threw the tea into the harbor. To punish the Americans, British passed a course of acts, closed the port of Boston, and put military governor General Gage in charge of Massachusetts. They also drew Quebec down further to prevent colonists from taking over the land.
Okay, good, good. All right, elaborate answer, excellent. Okay, so anyway, guys, technically, we just cannot keep banging our heads against the wall with a technical issue. So, Alexander, are you there? Yeah, all right. So both of you are just going to be in a listening mode, basically. That's going to be the last I have to say of it. All right. Number 11. Briefly tell the story of George Washington's conduct during the Revolutionary War. What did he represent to Americans during this period that is so aptly captured in Leutze's painting, Washington Crossing the Delaware? Ooh, I like this question. Good question, Mr. Powell. Okay. Who thinks they can tackle that one? Bria, go ahead.
I think I might be able to tackle the last part. I'm not sure I can do the first part.
Now, I just want to check with you, Bria, that you're clear on that it's ideally this is, you have all the answers written before you get here today. Is that clear? As a normal procedure, but you weren't able to fulfill that, right?
My grandmother was sick.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that. So, all right. So, well, let's see here. If anybody has a prepped answer first, I want to give them the benefit of selecting their answer. Even if you're not perfectly happy with your answer, you're better off giving it and having it critiqued. So, anybody? So, all right, let's see. Alexander, did you have a written answer? All right, so, I'm going to go ahead and just give you guys an answer here. So, briefly tell the story of George Washington's conduct during... I'm going to do this off the top of my head, but hopefully I can pull it off reasonably well. Okay, so, George Washington was made commander of the revolutionary forces at the beginning of the war. He had to fight a war of attrition to prevent America from being conquered. He most spectacularly crossed the Delaware as captured in Loyce's painting and won a crucial victory at the Battle of Trenton as part of his campaign in this war of attrition and won France as an ally. He then went on to win the Battle of Yorktown, the decisive battle of 1781, in which America by which America became independent. Washington was the crucial military leader of the Revolutionary War and is often thought of as the founding father. That's what he represents to America. He is the founding father. So if you want to get that down, go ahead and go back to the recordings and play it. Okay, so number 12, what were the main reasons? Give at least three. Why, even after winning the Revolutionary War, the 13 colonies might still not form a true United States of America. What was the key motivation for overcoming these obstacles? Sophie.
Among many reasons that made uniting the 13 states difficult, there was a differing opinions on slavery between the northern and southern states. The entire southern economy was built on slave labor, but the northerners thought it immoral and wrong. It was hard to congregate to discuss matters like this due to very large travel distances and separate forms of government between the different states. The one collective government of all 13 states was the Continental Congress, where they were the United States of America. All of the American colonists fought for their rights, and it was of paramount importance to maintain their independence from Britain.
Okay, I was fascinated by the answer. There's some really good stuff in there. So what I took from that was number one issue was disagreement over slavery. Number two was the distance between the states, if I got that correctly. And the third one, I cannot recall. So tell me what the third one was.
The third one was the different forms of government.
Different forms of government? That is a... What do you mean by that?
Like the House of Burgesses for Virginia.
Yeah, but that you got to be careful of the word form. What do you mean by forms of government? Were they different forms?
No.
No, they weren't different forms. They were different governments. So I think they were all pretty much cut from the same mold, which was a kind of representative parliament. So they weren't different forms of government. So watch out for that word. But yes, having the separate governments and traditions of local government and the management of local affairs, that was all certainly true. So they, that was, and by contrast, the Continental Congress was very weak and ineffective by comparison. So those are good answers. They're not all the answers. What else? So Sophie's got three. She's got separate governments, great distances, and the issue of slavery. What else? What were the other issues separating the colonies, keeping them from unifying, really? So religions was enough. Differences of religion would certainly be a motivating factor, because we're still at the point where that concerns people, but it's definitely not one of the major ones. Land claims is what Alexander is saying, and that is an important one. Competing land claims, and along with that, competing views on trade. Yeah, trade competition, right? The kind of thing that the whole reason for colonies was a certain combative view of trade, that you don't want to trade with others and so on because they benefit and you don't want them to benefit. And boy, people had trouble being benevolent towards each other. And so if they were to compete in trade, make special deals with Britain or France or whatever, this was going to lead to all kinds of problems relating to smuggling, relating to basically just the competitive cutthroat competition between different states and some having regulations and some not and so on. So yeah, this was, and it's interesting, that still goes on today. It's a very interesting thing, and people still haven't really, what can I say? That still goes on today. I mean, Texas, for instance, is a state that is constantly growing because it's attracting a lot of people from other states that don't want to live in those states anymore because of the rules and regulations and taxes and so on from those states. So there is still that type of economic competition. It's within a certain framework, but it's still going on today. And it happens all over the world. Countries with lower taxation and lower regulations tend to drain away the talent from those where there is more taxation and more regulation. So economists call this a brain drain. And it is a very well-recorded phenomenon across different industries. And so the people that make the freest countries tend to attract the best talent and benefit the most from it. Those that go down the wrong path end up getting punished by the talent going on strike. So, all right. I think we got the main reasons here. And Sophie also gave us the key motivation. Being united. Right? Being united in order to stay independent. Okay. So, continuing on. Number 13. Explain the place of each. Well, this is kind of like what Sophie was doing before. Declaration, Constitution, Bill of Rights in defining the nature of American government. So, Sophie, it sounds like you're in the right position to move on with this. Go ahead.
The Declaration of Independence was the formal declaration made by the Founding Fathers to declare that America was going to be its own country, separate from Britain. It is considered the birth of the United States, and it's arguably the foundation of all America. The Constitution was a set of laws composed by the Founding Fathers to regulate the new United States. Also in the Constitution was the rights of the different states and how they would be properly represented. Patrick Henry presented the idea that the proposed government could gain too much power and take over the colonists' rights. This prompted the addition of 10 new laws called the Bill of Rights. These constitutional amendments defended much of the Americans' newfound freedom.
Okay, good. I think the one thing that's missing that would weave those examples together is the idea that the Declaration of Independence states the purpose of government. The purpose of government is to secure rights. Then, once you have that, then you can say the Constitution implements that an approach to government that is designed to protect rights. But the founders saw it as incomplete, and therefore, in order to fulfill the purpose, which is laid out in the Declaration, they added the amendments of the Bill of Rights to make sure that the government could not do certain things, and therefore rights would be especially well protected. See how having the benefit of that theme gives you that unification of those different documents on a whole new level, right? If you are, the key here, Sophie, is identifying the essentials, involved, or the essence, which is really a single one, individual rights. If you can identify the essence, then you're able to see that as it kind of courses through this progression. Declare rights, create a government for rights, but make sure that it doesn't harm rights. See, that's how it works. Very simple. Simple and crisp and clear. And then after that, once you're clear on that progression, then you're fine when you're going to go into the details, as I can tell you've been doing with other readings and stuff like that. If you get into those details without understanding the essence, I guarantee you what will happen instead is you'll get distracted. You'll get your mind all cluttered up with non-essentials, and that won't do you any good. You'll just get confused, and it'll be less and less relevant instead of more and more relevant. So be careful. I mean, I don't know if it's your choice or what your parents are insisting that you do to read other sources and stuff like that, but you tell them Mr. Powell's worried that more is not necessarily better. You'd be better off focusing on essentials rather than piling too much more content on yourself through additional readings. Got to get it straight before you keep on piling stuff on. Okay, so number 14. Great work, though, by the way. Great work, Sophie. I mean, you're doing great work, but I just wanted to give you some advice. Okay, number 14. Explain one key thing each of the founding fathers did as president to help make sure the United States would remain independent during the founding era. Whew, okay, how are we doing here? Ben.
One thing George Washington did to ensure the independence of America was to not allow America to get involved in the French Revolution.
Okay.
One thing John Adams did was to, while refusing to declare war on France, authorize American ships to defend themselves against French attackers.
Okay.
One thing Thomas Jefferson did was to prevent Napoleon from trying to conquer America by threatening to ally with Britain. One thing James Madison did was to stand up to Britain, pressing Americans into their navy. Finally, one thing James Monroe did was to issue the Monroe Doctrine.
Okay, those are all good. There were a couple that needed that were a little bit barren, that needed a little bit more, such as James Madison went up against the British in the war of 18, by declaring war in the war of 1812. Okay, so we need that specific detail. And another thing that was missing was, yes, Thomas Jefferson stood up to Napoleon, resulting in the Louisiana Purchase. So that was an interesting set of answers, Ben, because it was kind of the opposite of what was Sophie's answers earlier were focused on some of the details. Your answer was focused on some of the meaning at the expense of the details. So that's kind of cool because you can see how in both cases that what you need in order to get to the full and complete answer is both. You need to remember the details and you need to remember the meaning and then go together. Okay, so it's not just that it's kind of Thomas Jefferson in a general sort of way threatened Napoleon. No, he negotiated the Louisiana Purchase by explaining that threat to Napoleon. So see how they go together. Keep the concrete details and the principle together is what you need to do. Okay. Very nice. All right, so we'll do the bonus questions and then raise your hand if you want to answer anything that I missed previously. If you didn't get a chance to ask me a question or answer a question or anything at all, you can let me know for that one as well. So anyway, I'm just going to go ahead and just do these ones quickly. So what is the final line from Patrick Henry's most famous speech? Sophie.
Give me liberty or give me death.
All right. Number 16. What were the promoters and opponents of the Constitution called during the critical period? Hopefully Keene remembers.
These were the Federalists and Anti-Federalists, right?
Okay, and your dog agrees. Now, what was the final major battle of the Revolutionary War? Go ahead, Sophie.
Yorktown.
Yorktown, okay. From whom did Jefferson purchase Louisiana? We just talked about that, Napoleon. And then finally, what are the names of the two-part Parliament or Congress of the United States, Ben?
The House of Representatives and the Senate.
The House of Representatives and the Senate. Okay, so, like I said, anybody have other things, other issues, let me know. Bria, you want to stick around to talk to me after class? That's fine. Otherwise, then, I will let you go and wish you luck on the test. And we'll reconvene next week to pick up the story where we left off. So, thank you all. Bye for now.